A few things have changed since NHPR first began as Granite State Public Radio back in 1981.
Welcome WEVO in Concord, New Hampshire to the NPR and All Things Considered family.
But through it all, local listener support has made this station possible. And for a limited time, we'll send you a classic canvas tote featuring the retro Granite State Public Radio logo when you become an NHPR sustainer at the discounted rate of $13 a month. But don't wait. Give now at nhpr.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire has one of the nation's lowest poverty rates. Still, youth homelessness is a growing problem. Up to 15,000 Granite State teenagers and young adults could experience homelessness or housing instability this year, according to national research. And addressing their struggles is even more difficult in the pandemic. Today in The Exchange, we get a picture of what's going on and why advocates say now is the time to pursue lasting solutions. Listeners, let's hear from you too. Whether you've experienced this yourself or you want to know more about it, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 800-892-6477. Our guests are Erin Kelly, Director of Homeless Youth and Young Adult Services at Waypoint, a nonprofit human services agency. She's also a member of the Governor's Council on Housing Stability. And Erin, a big welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And also with us, Ariel Hayes. She's coordinator of Rochester's forthcoming Youth Resource Center. She's also worked as a street outreach specialist and a case manager for Waypoint. And Ariel, thank you too for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, Erin, how do the young people you work with and ages, 12 to 24, 25, how do they become homeless?
Yeah, so, every young person who experiences homelessness or housing instability really does have their own unique story, although we definitely see trends across the board. When you think about our young people, they are youth who oftentimes throughout their lives have experienced significant abuse and neglect and really complex trauma. So sometimes we think about trauma and we think about a specific point that's sort of an acute trauma, like a car accident or something that you can really hone into one point in time, where a lot of our young people have lived a life where they've grown up in poverty, parents or caregivers with addiction, abuse, neglect, and just real complex trauma throughout their lives. Many of our young people have experienced generational poverty, where they have been in and out of housing stability with their families throughout their lives. So living sometimes in family emergency shelters when they're children and never really understanding what it's like to have housing stability. And for some of our young people, they've grown up with parents who have had untreated substance abuse issues or untreated mental health issues. And then as youth or young adults, sometimes our young people also have those things, experience mental health issues and are not sure how to get the right help for them or how to access services, and also experiencing substance use and addiction and not being able to grasp onto a level of stability as a result.
Wow. And Ariel, how about you? What stories have you heard in your work as a street outreach specialist?
I completely agree with everything that Erin would say. I also, there is that history of poverty, absolutely, which really does, we lack as a community a lot of the safety net services that we need to interrupt that from generation to generation. So the poverty and the trauma that goes along with that is absolutely something that I see in a lot of the young people I've worked with. It's also sometimes, like Erin said, a single event, and our young people often don't have good credit built up. They might have pets, and then just the reality of the New Hampshire housing market being so tight, if they lose their apartment or have one event that causes them to lose their job or have some sort of lose their stability in one way or another, that can often lead them to homelessness. And it's so hard to get back on your feet when there's so little available. And you're a young person who may or may not have the supports that other people do that help them maintain that stability. There really is no one story. All of the young people I work with are incredibly unique and have their own circumstances and their own paths and so many strengths. But yeah, it feels, when we talk about youth homelessness, it feels like this big kind of like distant issue, but it really can be anyone in a lot of ways. And then we also have the young people who are at a much greater risk and are much more likely to experience this.
Well, and this may sound like an obvious question, Ariel, but what's the difference between a youth being homeless and an adult being homeless? Because there are some differences there.
There absolutely are. One thing that I notice a lot in my work is just that our young adults, like, this is their first time being homeless. They're 18 to 21, the young adults I work with. So they just got out of their parents' households a lot of the time, or their guardians, whoever their safe person was, and are really like taking on the world. So they're a lot more vulnerable in that they don't have a lot of the same skills to like find a safe place to be and to deal with the instability and scariness that homelessness is. So that's definitely a factor. They're learning how to be homeless, and we hope that they get out of homelessness so they don't need to continue to learn that, but they don't have a lot of the same skills that the older population of homeless individuals does. And then their brains are still developing. They're young. And they don't have the work experience, they don't have credit, they may or may not have a support community. So there's a lot of different things that go into that. But homelessness is really scary. And being a young adult experiencing that is especially scary.
You know, you raised something I wanted to ask you too, Erin. Given what we know now about brain development during those critical teen and young adult years, why is it so important to tackle this problem of youth homelessness, Erin, again, given what we know about how the brain develops during that time?
Yeah, I mean, really being able to provide services to young people at this stage of their life where they're still developing, they are learning skills, as Ariel was talking about, they are learning their values and what they are going to be in this world and how they connect to the world and the community around them. It's such an integral part of them growing up. And if we can intervene at this time, it could really change the trajectory for the rest of their lives. What we don't want, as Ariel mentioned, is for them to really start to assimilate or to identify with the adult homeless population and start to consider themselves a chronically homeless individual. We want them to be able to, at this time where they have an opportunity to really change their lives, to see the potential for something different. And so this is the opportunity we have to expose them to that and to teach them those skills. So a lot of the work that we do in our programs is about walking kind of the road with them. So when they make mistakes or they, lose a job that they had, or they don't make a choice that maybe we would recommend to them, it gives us an opportunity to process that and help them to learn those things so that they can start to develop and move into the right direction, versus some of the programs that you can imagine are really geared towards adults, where, the adults are expected to kind of make the right decision on their own without having a lot of kind of guidance or somebody kind of walking next to you. So it really is an opportunity to intervene at a time where it can make the biggest difference in their lives.
Oh, that's interesting, Erin. So for any young adult or teenager, you know, it's a time of life, right, when people are kind of defining themselves. I am a person who, you know, so it's especially important to intervene at this moment, Erin, because you don't want young people to define themselves as, you know, I am a person who lives on the street.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that that is one of the reasons why it's so important to be able to expose young people to people who are have careers, people who are achieving other things in their lives, because I think a lot of the young people who may have grown up in poverty, they see people around them or people in their network maybe working, you know, two or three low wage jobs to kind of make ends meet. But what we really want our young people to understand is that they have the opportunity to create a life that they love, that they really want to live, and that that could be anything for them. And so really being able to work with them and walk beside them and expose them to a world far beyond maybe what they've already been exposed to in their short lives, and help them to be able to see all of the possibilities so that as they're forming their identity and figuring out who they are, they think about themselves as somebody who, you know, maybe I'm an electrician, or I am a college student, or you know, I am somebody who is a really productive and healthy mom who can provide stable housing for her children.
Aria, when you're working with teens or young adults who've ended up in this place, as you both said, they've clearly been through trauma. How do you work with them in what's called a trauma-informed way?
The emphasis is really on letting them lead the goals and letting them make decisions about what they are and aren't ready for. We certainly can like contribute to that in a lot of ways and kind of help them move through that process of like deciding what they want their goals to be, doing some dreaming. But it's really important that like our relationship with them as clients, as with us being the case managers and them being the clients, is to support them and to not pressure them into anything. So when I'm approaching a client from a trauma-informed place, I'm making sure that what they're telling me about what their goals and what they want to be working on is reflected in the work I'm doing with them. And that like there is space to make mistakes, like Aaron said, there's space to explore different things and have it not work out. And I'm going to continue to sit with them through that and be a supportive person. It's not one mistake and you're out. It's really like a walk alongside relationship where I can continue to be a safe person to them through all of this, and really am showing up for them and their goals.
Listeners, we are talking about young Granite Staters and homelessness today. And join our conversation. Do you know of any teens or young adults who are in this situation or who might be in it? Do you have personal experience with this issue? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. Ariella, practical question. Both of you talked earlier about how young people come into homelessness, and you know, you mentioned all sorts of situations. Where do you find these young people living, Ariel? Are they in tents? Are they couch surfing? Do they live in cars? You know, what sorts of stories have you heard?
They are mostly couch surfing, and that's one of the big reasons that we often don't hear about youth homelessness, because it is very much like the invisible homelessness. It's not something that like we as general community members usually can like see and immediately identify. The vast majority of our clients are couch surfing with friends, with family, staying for a few nights at a time. We do have some that are in their cars and outside. And like our young adults are very thrifty. They're good at figuring out how to like sleep in their cars without it being really obvious. And a lot of times they lead normal jobs and like seemingly normal lives. So like it is very much a hidden issue, and it's something that you can't always tell when you're just having a passing conversation with someone.
How often do you find your clients, Ariel, are sort of sticking together, a couple friends who, you know, might be homeless and at least they can support each other? And how much do you find homeless teens and young adults are on their own?
I would say most of them are on their own. Most of the young adults that I come into contact with, they do know each other, the young adults that we work with. We obviously follow confidentiality guidelines and stuff, but they know each other. They have interactions with each other. But as far as like working to get their own housing needs met and basic needs met, most of my clients are on their own, unless it's a couple who are couch surfing together.
Erin, when a young person grows up in the situation that both you and Ariel have described, housing instability, couch surfing, sometimes living on the street, what's the long-term impact, Erin, on their future children?
Yeah, I think that when we think about the trauma that is experienced by young people who are homeless or experiencing housing instability, it really does have lasting effects on who they are. You know, trauma, you know, we talked about the fact that young people are still in a stage where their brain is developing, and trauma rewires your brain. It is making it so that their brains right now are developing in a way that they are really hypersensitive to things like safety and really that kind of hypervigilance about who's around me, who's a safe person, who's not a safe person. Because Ariel, as Ariel mentioned earlier, homelessness is scary. And you have to be really on edge pretty much all the time. And living in that kind of trauma means that, you know, your brain is developing in that way. So as you can imagine, as these young adults have babies and children of their own, sometimes they pass that level of fear of the world or guardedness about people onto their children. And I think that is one of the ways where we get to intervene with them. I think a lot of people have heard about the adverse childhood experiences study and the questionnaire that goes along with that. And oftentimes in our parenting transitional living programs, our care coordinators will talk to our young adults about their own ACEs scores and about how their experience has changed who they are in a way that allows young people to be able to be educated and recognize that they want to do something different for their own children and babies so that they don't grow up with the kinds of adverse childhood experiences scores that our young adults have.
So it sounds like, Erin, you've got some peer counseling going on there. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, it's care coordinators. So our case managers that are in our parenting transitional living programs.
I see. And just a sort of factual point, Erin, if listeners know of a young person who might be homeless or is on the verge of homelessness, where can they reach out to help that person?
Yeah, so our on-call or 800 number is 1-800-640-6486. And that is also available on our website as well. So, you know, you can look at our website, you can call our number, and we can get you connected to the appropriate program in the appropriate part of the state that you're in.
Well, and we always put resources and information on our website as well, which is nhpr.org/exchange. So if you didn't catch that number when Erin gave it, you can always go to our website for that number and others, nhpr.org/exchange. We are going to take a very short break, but coming up, listener questions and comments. Plus, I want to ask both of you how the pandemic has affected the work that you're doing with homeless teens and young adults. And we have a story from a young woman who became homeless at age 18. So we'll hear about that as well. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. The This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a picture of youth homelessness in New Hampshire. And listeners, join our conversation. Do you have personal experience with this issue? How do you view this problem? And what do you see as a solution? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. We're talking with Erin Kelly. She's Director of Homeless Youth and Young Adult Services at Waypoint. And Ariel Hayes. She's coordinator of Rochester's forthcoming Youth Resource Center and has worked as a street outreach specialist and a case manager. One more time, that number, 800-892-6477. And our email, exchange@nhpr.org. So Erin and Ariel, I have an email from a listener who wished to remain anonymous, but really wants to share her story. It's a little bit long, but I'm going to read the whole thing because there's a lot here. So here we go. This listener says, I was 18 years old when I was kicked out by my father. He was an alcoholic and there was a lot of abuse at home. I graduated a few weeks before I turned 18 and I had a history teacher who promised me I would graduate on time. I had lost my brother, so he knew I was going through a lot. Shortly after I graduated, I moved in with my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, and his parents, but sadly it only got worse from there. Addiction severely affected his entire family. He unfortunately lost his father in October of 2019 due to alcohol abuse, and aside from his addiction, he was really amazing and outgoing person. His father had been a veteran who suffered from pretty severe PTSD. We were homeless off and on while living there for 8 months. We would sleep in his car more often than not to avoid their battles with addiction. Wow. This person says, a majority of last year, I was living in a motel. I went through a lot of abuse last year from people I was living with, and that's what caused me to stay in motels. My case manager, Ariel from Waypoint, helped me get on my feet. She helped me get housing papers signed. She helped me with phone calls, whatever I needed. Ariel and I have been working together for over 2 years now, and I'm grateful because I'm currently living in an apartment through housing. My father is now an amazing father to my two sons. I think she means grandfather there. My father is now an amazing grandfather to my two sons, and my husband is a terrific father, and I'm more than grateful for him. Thank you, says this person. Wow, Ariel, if you ever wake up saying, why am I doing this work? There you have it. I wanted to go to you first, Dario, but obviously bring you in too, Erin. This person talks about just the basics that you helped her with, you know, housing paper, phone calls. Can you talk a little bit, Ariel, about what you do, actions big and small, that help people who have been through so much trauma like this person get on their feet?
Absolutely. And I do want to say that this young adult is just an amazing human and has come so far since I met her, and I'm just incredibly proud of her. And she was really young when I met her, and she's now at the older side of our age spectrum. But a lot of times those basic things like making phone calls, or seemingly basic things like making phone calls, and filling out paperwork, can be a really big barrier if the young adults don't know how to do that already. And just the systems that we have in place are really confusing. We have housing authorities, which are amazing, but each of them has quite extensive applications, and you need copies of social security cards, which they may or may not, our young adults may or may not have. Lots of paperwork filled out, bank statements, and just like getting all of that together while also couch surfing and potentially taking care of young kids. It's a lot. It's a lot on any person, and it's especially a lot for a young adult who's experiencing homelessness for the first time. So a lot of what we do, like I said earlier, is just like walk that journey with them and help them figure out all these difficult steps and print papers and provide transportation and just be a safe person.
Wow, you're right. There's so much. And I mean, bureaucracy and paperwork can be frustrating for anybody. But Ariel, if you don't have, you know, you don't know where your birth certificate is or your social security card, you have no idea. You haven't lived in a home for 3 years. What about banking too, Ariel? You know, when you're trying to get your feet on the ground, you know, get a job, get an apartment, you sometimes need a bank account.
Absolutely. And that's a big barrier that a lot of our young adults face. If they have a bank account, sometimes they've overdrawn it and have ended up with a lot of fees. A lot of things that like people who aren't experiencing homelessness seem as like really basic and just things that they wouldn't think about can become huge barriers to our young adults. And like I said earlier, transportation and having access to a phone or a bank account, those are all things that can really slow down these processes for young adults.
You know, I'm also struck, Erin, by this person's story. There's a lot of alcohol abuse in this story. And she mentions also that her husband's father was a veteran who had PTSD, ultimately died from alcohol abuse. How familiar is that to you, Erin?
Yeah, you know, it is a very familiar story. I think it is very similar to what we were talking about before, about a lifetime of kind of complex trauma where, you know, generational trauma, where whether it's, you know, PTSD from being a veteran or growing up in a household where you were abused or neglected. And if they, you know, if there haven't been opportunities to intervene in that person's life, to be able to teach them some healthier coping mechanisms and to build supports for them to be able to figure out how to deal with their own trauma, then they turn to things like addiction or alcoholism. You know, it's their way of trying to cope with their own trauma, the experiences that they've had. And, you know, for a lot of them, I think that they unknowingly or unintentionally pass on trauma to their own children. And we are seeing that generation of young adults who have experienced those kinds of things as they've grown up. And, you know, what kind of strikes me in this situation is that, you know, she got kicked out when she was 18 years old. But if you think about her story, you know that she was hiding that violence and that trauma that was occurring in her home for much longer than that. So, you know, as a young teenager and as a child, she was being affected by the things that were happening in her home. And at 18, when she, you know, left home at when her father kicked her out, she had the opportunity to be able to do things like apply for housing through a housing authority and get an apartment. But we have youth and young adults in our state as well who are experiencing these kinds of things. And at 15, 16, and 17 year olds are leaving their homes and couch surfing and moving from place to place in order to avoid situations like that as well. And they don't have the opportunity to go out and get their own apartment right now.
I love what also this listener says about, I had a history teacher who promised me I would graduate on time. I had lost my brother, so he knew I was going through a lot. And this is a question I did want to ask both of you. Ariel, I'm guessing, you know, schools, caring adults at schools, teachers, staff, whatever, used to be a place where youth in this situation might get some support. How are you working with this given the pandemic? You know, we just don't have the face-to-face connections we used to have.
Absolutely. And having those positive adults in young people's lives really is a protective factor. And the research shows that. It shows that even if a young adult is going through so much adversity in their life, if they just have one caring adult with pure motives who is there to support them and believe in them, like that does make a lasting impact and protects them from a lot of the, or is a protective trauma, a protective factor in a lot of the trauma that they are facing. And it has been very challenging with schools closing. Most of the young adults that I work with are over 18, but we do get a lot of referrals from schools. We have many young adults who will turn 18 during their senior year of high school and lose their housing. And it's those McKinney-Vento liaisons and counselors that really like make that connection to us. So we're seeing it on that end. And then we're just seeing a lot of young adults lose that sense of stability and routine that they get from schools, which is especially hard as they're making this big, meaningful transition from being a minor with these support systems potentially in place to being a young adult in many ways on their own.
So you said McKinney-Vento, what's that, Ariel?
Those are, each school has a McKinney-Vento liaison who is responsible for supporting families experiencing homelessness and connecting them to resources in the community.
Okay. And Erin, you know, I'd like to ask you too about how young people, you know, either homeless or on the verge of homelessness, how the pandemic has affected their ability to even couch surf, right? People who might have said a year ago, sure, you can stay on my couch for a month. Now, given the pandemic, might not want to make that invitation.
Yeah, I think that the effect of the pandemic on our young people has been pretty broad, you know, and depending on the person and their situation, it has affected them differently. But I think, as Ariel said, I think some of the pieces are just being able to be connected on a regular basis to their support networks, whether that's school, our mental health services, or substance abuse services. Because, you know, everything went to remote when the pandemic started. And we really made a lot of assumptions that people that were accessing things like medical care or mental health care, behavioral health care, substance abuse services or recovery services had the ability to just kind of roll with that and also be able to continue to stay connected to their supports remotely. And that isn't necessarily true for our young people. They didn't always have access to the internet or to the technology and devices that they needed to be able to be connected to their support networks. And in addition to that, you know, like you said, a lot of young people who were couch surfing found themselves literally homeless, either on the street or in their cars, or looking at an adult emergency shelter as their answer, because people were a little bit more leery about saying, yes, please come stay on my floor or my couch, because they didn't really know whether that person might be bringing the virus into their home.
Well, again, it's good that this person wrote, and it's great to hear that she is doing well after all that she's been through. So I want to thank her for writing. Here's another email from Anne in Durham. Anne says, I have a few questions. What proportion of homeless emerging adults are youth that have aged out of the foster care system? And then Anne also says, can you discuss youth homelessness due to rejection for LGBTQ+ identities? And thank you for writing. Let's take the second part of her question first. And Ariel, what have you seen and heard?
LGBTQ youth are definitely one of those demographics we see a lot more in our programming, or disproportional representation. We see both like the side of young adults being kicked out, and there's research to show that young adults are about 4 times more likely to experience homelessness if they do identify as part of the LGBTQ community. And on the other side of that, we see additional difficulties escaping homelessness, I guess, or moving out of homelessness as they try to access jobs and supportive housing, and resources may or may not be as supportive to young adults' identities as we would like. So sometimes there's difficulties too in like a shelter feeling like a safe and accepting place. So really there are difficulties at many different levels.
Mandy from Sanford, Maine also wrote, I would like to add that LGBTQ plus youth and young adults experience homelessness and housing instability at a rate higher than their peers. Mandy says, we need a myriad of supports and services to meet the complex needs of our youth. to include youth shelters, additional transitional living spaces, affordable housing, and access to safe and supportive communities where they feel like they belong. So there's Mandy weighing in also on that issue. To Anne's other question, though, Erin, I'll go to you. What proportion of homeless emerging adults are youth that have aged out of the foster care system? It's a good question, Anne. Thank you.
Yes. Across the country, we see that about 25% of youth or young adults that are experiencing homelessness have aged out of some system of care, so either juvenile justice or child protective services. It is in a population that has been identified in New Hampshire. And I think that the state has done a good job of really kind of digging into trying to put some infrastructure in place to support those young people. We have brought some vouchers into our state that are specific housing vouchers that are eligible only to young people who have been in systems of care past their 16th birthday. So a lot of housing authorities and our New Hampshire Housing Finance Authority has those vouchers that are specific to this population. And I think the recent change in our child welfare system where foster care is available to young people up to the age of 21 is also another opportunity or attempt at trying to really combat homelessness amongst this population. I think previous to those things, we were seeing a lot of young people who, you know, when they turned 18, they aged out of foster care and moved into whatever transition plan they thought was going to work. And they kind of developed with their workers in the child welfare system. And it was, you know, at 19 or 20 when some of those things fell apart and they didn't have anybody to lean back on. When you think about this developmental stage, you know, a lot of 18-year-olds that leave home and go on their own at 19 or 20, if they're struggling, if they lose a job or they've overdrawn their checking account or they lose housing for some reason, they move back home or they call their family of origin and ask for assistance.
Right.
And when you've aged out of the foster care system and you,
who do you call?
You don't have the opportunity to do that.
So that's really interesting what you just told us, Erin. So when did that change take place where foster care is available for young people up to age 21?
It is now in our state. It is called the HOPE program. And I don't know exactly the date that it started, but it was very recent in the last 6 months, a very recent change in our child welfare system in our state as an attempt to try to help some of the young people, recognizing that 18-year-olds are not all of a sudden adults because they turned 18 on their birthday and they're not necessarily ready to go out into the world and be on their own and be able to manage all of the things adults have to manage, and providing a safety net and additional supports until their 21st birthday is one of the ways that we can prevent young people from experiencing homelessness.
Sure, especially if they grew up in the foster care system. We're going to take a very quick break, and coming up, more of your emails, questions, stories. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 800-892-6477. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, part two of our series on the mental health impacts of this past year called Taking a Toll. In this second program, we'll focus in on children. So join us Wednesday morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about teen and young adult homelessness with two people who work on this with the nonprofit human services group Waypoint. They are Erin Kelly, Director of Homeless Youth and Young Adult Services, and Ariel Hayes. She's worked as a street outreach specialist and case manager. And Exchange listeners, it's been good to hear from you. We welcome your emails with questions and comments. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 800 800-892-6477. You can also use Facebook. Again, our email exchange at nhpr.org. So just before the break, Erin, you were talking about the connection between the foster care system and possible homelessness for teenagers and young adults. And you told us about there's now a new rule where people don't have to exactly age out at 18. They can stay in until 21. What about, Ariel, connections between the juvenile justice system and youth homelessness?
That's absolutely something we see as well. I have had clients who have attended Mount Prospect Academy, and they aged out of that and into homelessness. And one thing that we see a lot of times with juvenile justice specifically, but also with young adults aging out of the foster care system, is that they may leave that system with supports available, but not wanting to use those supports at this time in their life. So there's now an opportunity for young adults to connect with aftercare services later on in their, like a couple years after they've left the system. But in the past, that was not the case. So we would see a lot of young adults who may have aged out of foster care or aged out of the juvenile justice system, and at that point decided that they were not interested in aftercare services or any sort of involvement with either system. And then we would see them later on through our programming.
That's interesting. And what is Mount Prospect Academy that you mentioned, Ariel?
That is a, I don't have the right language to describe it. It's a school for young adults who have had a lot of teenagers at the high school, for young adults who have had a lot of involvement with the juvenile justice system.
Yeah, so a similar situation, it sounds like, Erin, from the foster care system. You kind of age out of these systems, for lack of a better word, Erin, and then you have to figure it out. And as Ariel told us, sometimes a young person who is out isn't in the emotional place to accept the services. I'd love your thoughts, too, on what we just heard from Ariel there, Erin.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she is right on the mark. I feel like we have a lot of young people who are in our juvenile justice system, and especially if they've been in out-of-home placement like Mount Prospect Academy or other places throughout the state, youth residential facilities, and they're aging out, they're turning 18. You know, the residential facility does not have the ability to necessarily keep them very long after their 18th birthday, right? So they could have a waiver maybe for a little while, but they're licensed up to 18 years old. So even if those residential facilities want to do what is in the very best interest of these young people, they don't have the ability necessarily to continue to provide housing and stability for them. So we often get referrals from residential facilities and juvenile probation officers into our transitional living programs. Our transitional living programs for youth 18 to 21 are in 5 sites throughout the state. And unfortunately, they are almost constantly full. And wow. At any given time, we have somewhere between 40 and 50 young people on our waiting list. So when a juvenile probation officer or residential facility might be referring a young person who's going to be aging out of their care and their system to us, we might not have the availability to be able to house that person for sometimes 6, 8, 9 months.
Wow. So what do they do in the meantime, Erin?
I mean, I think that that is exactly the unfortunate part, is that these gaps in our system are the things that cause young people to experience homelessness. So sometimes they, you know, work with their probation officer to kind of piecemeal, I'm going to go stay with, you know, a family friend or a distant relative, or maybe I'll go back to my family of origin, and that doesn't work out. And they end up experiencing homelessness and on our streets, or looking at the adult emergency shelter system as a response.
Sure. And again, given the pandemic, it's probably harder to find that friend or family member who might want to take you in. You mentioned, Erin, those five sites throughout the state and the long waiting list there. Are any of those sites in New Hampshire's North Country? Because I'm wondering about, you know, services and setups for young adults in rural versus urban situations.
Yes. So we have one transitional living program that is for pregnant or parenting young people in Littleton. So that is our most north reaching program. But I think that you're right. There are, when we talk about gaps in the system, those gaps are not just gaps in services, but also geographical gaps. You know, Waypoint only has services in, you know, a few geographic areas throughout the state, but there are many, many communities in New Hampshire that have no youth or young adult specific services for those that are experiencing homelessness or housing instability.
Well, Grace wrote us an email. Grace says, are there programs to provide education and job training for these young people? Grace says, seems that is equally as important as a place to sleep and food to eat. Grace, thank you for writing in. And Ariel, what do you think?
Could you ask the question one more time? I'm sorry.
Sure. Grace says, are there programs to provide education and job training? Seems that is just as important as a place to sleep and food to eat.
Absolutely. And one interesting thing that we see with a lot of our young people is that those really go hand in hand. It's very hard to maintain a job without having a safe and stable place to call home. So we absolutely work with our young people. We'll help them make resumes, search for jobs. And we also like to partner with other programs in the state where that is their main focus. MyTurn works specifically with young adults who are looking to build their career. And like Erin was talking about, kind of break that trend of generational poverty. So we'll work closely with them. There's also other programs in the state like Voc Rehab, and other career counseling services. So we really try to focus on what we're good at and partner with other organizations to draw on what they're good at as well. But like I said, a lot of times it's this really difficult situation that young adults are in where it's very hard for them to maintain a job without housing, and it's very hard for them to get housing without a job. So that's where our transitional living programs come in and become especially important.
Sure. And I'm thinking about all the forms that, you know, we all fill out on a daily basis. And one of the first things they ask you, besides your name, is where do you live? And if you don't have a place to live, it's kind of hard to fill out that form. Grace, thanks for writing. Again, our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number is 800-892-6477. Ariel, I've been identifying you this hour as the program director of the forthcoming drop-in center in Rochester. So what's happening with getting that center open?
Yes. So I will be the site coordinator for that location. We are looking to open up a drop-in center in the city of Rochester. It would be modeled after the one that we currently have open in the city of Manchester. And this will be a safe space where young adults can access showers, do laundry, hang out with safe adults. We'll have groups. It's really designed to be a safe space where young adults can build their community, interact with staff, interact with each other, and really go through those like difficult parts of being a young adult and being a teen in a safe and supportive environment.
So that's where you met the listener who wrote in earlier with that very traumatic story, which ended up, you know, well, partly due to you, Ariel, and the work that you did with her. So how does that work? You know, you have the center, you're just kind of there, Ariel, and people come in and say, I need help. I mean, is it as simple as that? At least in terms of getting started.
Yeah, so it's designed to be a space that young adults can use as fits their needs and as they would like. The one in Manchester has a couple offices for case managers. So a lot of times if a young adult is interested and engaged in case management, they will build a relationship with the case manager in that space and start working on their long-term goals there. And It's also just, like I said earlier, really a space that's designed to meet the young adults in their needs, and they get to decide what they want to get out of it.
Let's take a call, and this is Susan in Lebanon. Hi, Susan, you're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for that. This subject is very important. It has to do with the future of our children.
Sure.
So my background is in nursing, and my focus has been neuroendocrinology because I've been studying the effects of stress, traumatic stress in children, and what happens to their bodies. And what, during my research, I discovered is that the cortisol levels in the bodies of people who have been stressed as children rises, and serotonin levels are lower, so that treatment with serotonin selective reuptake inhibitors is probably not a good idea with this group because they don't have that much serotonin in their brains to inhibit reuptake. And also because of the cortisol levels in their bloodstream because of stress and trauma, the effects on their bodies of anti-inflammatories can be pretty dramatic. So I just wanted to advocate for our healthcare profession, which has not had that training in medical school in order to treat this very special group of people.
And Susan, sorry to interrupt. I just want to let you know, too, Susan, I'm so glad you called, that our show on the mental health impacts of this past crazy year that we've all lived through, tomorrow we are going to focus specifically on children. So I'm going to raise that with the guests tomorrow for sure. For now, though, Erin, it sounds like what we talked about earlier, you need to help this population with an eye to, as Susan said, you know, the trauma and the effect on the mind and the body.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she raises a really good point. I think that we have to get to our place where our medical system and our healthcare workers have evolved in really understanding how complex trauma affects our body and our brains, so that when young people are experiencing things like anxiety and depression, or even other medical symptoms, whether that's, high blood pressure or, heart palpitations or chest pain, that they can also treat them from a trauma-informed care lens, both, knowing what's happening in their body based on the trauma that they have experienced, and really having a good understanding of what their life has looked like. You know, oftentimes medical professionals, you know, ask a lot of the medical questions, but maybe have no idea the sort of trauma that young adults who are accessing medical care have experienced, or what their life looks like.
Wow. Well, Susan, again, I'm glad you called, because it's really important, and we will talk about this more tomorrow when we talk about mental health and how children are doing. So thank you for now. Carol writes, what could the state provide to support the ending of youth homelessness? And boy, Erin and Ariel, I know this is a question that you would like to address. Erin, I'm going to turn to you first. You're on the Governor's Council on Housing Stability, for example. So how might just this council's work address the problem of youth homelessness?
Well, I think the council is really focused on looking at affordable housing and some of the issues that are preventing access to affordable housing throughout our state. So I think that is a start. I also think, just in general, I think that we have to acknowledge in our state that, we have made some grave assumptions for a long time that youth under 18 who may be experiencing housing instability or homelessness are going to be scooped up by our child welfare system. And we have also made some assumptions that youth who are over 18 are in a place in their lives where the adult homeless services system is an appropriate place for them to access services. And neither one of those assumptions are correct. As we know, there are a lot of young people who are under the age of 18, who their situation or what they're willing to tell people about their situation does not necessarily meet the threshold for child welfare, but that does not make their home or their family of origin a safe place for them. And as we've talked a lot about, the adult homeless services system and emergency shelter system is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for young adults. So what we really need to do in this state is to really acknowledge that our current systems of care in our state are not set up to respond to this youth and young adult population and the needs that they have. And we have to start investing in a system to do something different.
Ariel, very quickly, because we're coming close to the end, you have your annual Sleep Out event coming up later in March. It's going to be different this year. Instead of gathering in groups, people are encouraged to sleep out in their backyards. Do you just want to briefly tell us about that?
Absolutely. So we encourage people to sleep in the rough on March 26th. So this can look a lot of different ways. It could be just sleeping on your floor, in your basement, on your porch, or it could be literally camping outside for the night and raise money for our programs. Okay. If you are interested in participating, please visit our Sleep Out Waypoint page, and there's a lot more information on there.
Well, and as I said earlier, we always have lots of information and links on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, including to that event. Erin and Ariel, it was really great to have you. Thank you very much for your time. And today's show was produced by Exchange senior producer Ellen Grimm. This is The Exchange. Thanks for being with us, everybody, on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.